everybody. Welcome to Glitchy Pancakes, real talk about the world of fandom. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Rob.
Today, we want to talk about protest, rebellion, resistance, insurrection in the context of speculative fiction. Yes, in the context of speculative fiction and fandom. And we have with us to talk about this an award-winning multi-genre author, editor, publisher. She has an excellent new fiction collection out right now, Nine Bar Blues. It's out available from Third Man Books, anywhere you can buy books.
Check it out.
We recommend, by the way, buying books, we recommend look at IndieBound or Bookshop, but look for Nine Bar Blues by today. Today's guest, Sheree Renee Thomas. Welcome, Sheree.
Welcome, Sheree.
Thank you. Hi.
How are you holding up? We talked about this a little before, but you're hanging in there pretty well.
I'm hanging in there most days. Some days are better than others. I have been holding on to my books and my throws and my blankies.
And eating my
snacks.
Right.
Oh, don't talk to me about snacks right now. Exactly. I feel like snacks and books have been my blanket for the last several weeks. Like they're just
I'm surrounded by snacks and books right now. Japanese snacks. And I got some Mexican snacks, and I have my little books over here. And my I've built my little cave of comfort.
Oh man,
yeah, I need to escape.
Music has been holding me down too.
Music always holds me down. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What do you listen to?
Well, it depends on the day. Today I listened to a lot of Roy Ayers. That was really good. Okay. It was a very beautiful sunny day here in Memphis, so I listened to Everyone Loves the Sunshine. I listened to Liquid Love. That was wonderful. I listened to a little Bossa Nova. Which always makes me feel like I'm traveling.
Right, right.
But so I don't want to be in Brazil right now.
Right.
But one day.
Exactly. Right. It's stampy music. It makes you want to just go. I'm sorry, Jesse. I didn't mean to cut you off. I just got to escape a little bit.
No, you didn't cut me off. Actually, that was something that I'm glad you mentioned music, because I noticed that with I mentioned I'm currently reading Nine Bar Blues, your new fiction collection, and I definitely got the sense already that you're somebody who has music as kind of an undercurrent of your thinking, because there's just that sort of thematic element to what you're currently what you got out there currently. And we know we wanted to talk about the protest and rebellion and speculative fiction. You've done a ton of work as a writer yourself, but also as an editor, researching and compiling works from people over a huge span of time. Actually, like I know the Dark Matter anthologies won the World Fantasy. Did both of them win the World Fantasy Award? Is that right?
They did. They honored them with the World Fantasy Award in 2001 and 2005.
Yeah. So that so you have a really broad knowledge of speculative fiction in a historical context, not just as a fan of it. So we kind of wanted to know what, in your opinion, if anything comes to mind, what kind of mirrors the current protest, the zeitgeist right now in the realm of speculative fiction, or in your body of work, if you want to talk about that.
Well, unfortunately, it's the same cycle. So I feel like even if we were looking at like some of the works I mentioned in the first Dark Matter, Blake, The Huts of America by Martin Delaney, which he published in 1857, or if I'm looking at Pastor Sudney Griggs, who wrote Imperium and Imperio in 1899, they were still looking at this ideal of citizenship, of Black people being treated as humans first, and then as actual free people and American citizens. And it seems like that is the same conversation we are having again in the 21st century, which is very unfortunate. So there's that cycle of Black freedom and liberation in the area, the genre that I look at.
Yeah, that is unfortunate we're still having the same thing going on. And Rob, do you have a question?
Yes. Hypothetically, if you had to write an ending to our current situation, how would that play out?
An ending to it? Oh, wow. So it would be. The meek shall inherit the earth. Right. It would be. It would have to be considered science fiction, I guess, or fantasy, because suddenly humanity would have evolved further than we've managed to do all of these thousands and thousands of years, where we are really examining this idea of hierarchy, which Octavia Butler talked a lot about in her work, that she felt like it was one of humanity's biggest flaws, is that no matter how intelligent we become and how much technology we create to make theoretically our lives easier and better and more efficient, we still have this character flaw as a species, where we almost seem to need to have a hierarchy over each other, you know. And it causes exploitation, it causes violence and oppression of different groups over time, whether it's women or children at some point, or child laborers, you know, or whatever is going on, you know. Right. This idea that you, instead of being one with each other and working to reach common goals, there's always got to be a group or someone who's, you know, has a huge advantages over everyone else and is actually using them very irresponsibly. So that's a problem. So my ending would be that we suddenly come to our senses and we realize there is a smarter, more, you know, egalitarian way to run our society, and that we completely tear up the old social contracts, which mostly aren't being honored anyway, right? And create a society that really has these principles, that each life literally is a value and is equal to the other, and that I want for my children what you want for yours.
So you mentioned evolution. Would this be a fast track evolution, like something that happens through pressure, a physical manifestation, or would this be an evolution of thought?
Well, it depends on how I'm feeling. On the day when I'm feeling hopeful about humanity, it would be a matter of diplomacy and just the majority of people having more courage to speak out against a system that they actually benefit from, which is very difficult to do when you have privileges. Anyone, when you have privileges, it's very hard to give them up willingly, you know. Mm-hmm. And people like to pretend like they don't know they have privileges, but they absolutely do. You know what you don't want to be. Uh-huh. you know how you don't want to be treated. So you're very.
I'm 6'2", and I help people with stuff off the top shelf on a regular basis. I know that I'm tall and I have the ability to help people. That's my privilege, is being a giant. I understand mm-hmm. that. And I appreciate that answer. So you're speaking from a diplomacy method, not just like an entire group of Black people developing bulletproof skin.
In my best way, I would say that, you know, that better angels spoke to people. But in, you know, on the days when I'm less generous about this character flaw that we have as a species, I recognize that it would have to be a violent uprising. Only when things are being burned up do people actually start taking things seriously. Because we've been marching forever. You can march.
Right.
And that's pretty usually, it's a little inconvenient for the localities that where you're marching. But it's pretty mm-hmm. inconvenient for everyone else, because nothing stops. Mm. The system maintains itself and keeps moving forward. But the minute when property starts being burned and it's multiplied across communities across the country, now we need to have a conversation, because it's difficult to maintain the same status quo. And I think that's unfortunate, but it would probably have to be a great deal more discomfort before things actually change. Because think about it, the way our country operates, we have a lot of narratives and stories we tell ourselves about America, but we are a warmongering country. For our mm-hmm. short history, we have been at war or at odds, even if we don't declare war officially. We have been using the threat of violence or violence itself more than diplomacy to get our way in the global economy and around the world. And we may have maybe a decade or more where we weren't officially at war or in some type of armed conflict with someone on the planet. So most in the real world, things change when there's violence, unfortunately. Very, very little changes significantly before that.
I agree with that, and it's unfortunate that it has to come to that. But there's unfortunately, it seems like that the people with a vested interest in the status quo, we'll talk about, I mean, white people really prefer nonviolent protest. They demand nonviolent protest because that is something that they can ignore. That's something that they can look the other way and say, well, you know, yeah, we hear you, and I'll change the frame of my Facebook photo right now and show a little support, but then we're just going to got to go back to, you know, go back to how things are. And it's amazing that with it being so, I think everybody knows, if they're being honest with themselves, that sometimes it absolutely does take that violent uprising to actually change anything significant. And that plays out all across speculative fiction in, you know, in the literature, in the movies, everywhere. I mean, Star Wars, it's a small under-resourced rebellion taking down a fascist dictatorship. And it's amazing how many people can watch that and completely miss the point of it, and turn around and be, you know, basically support fascism, if you want my opinion on it, at the same time that they purport to love a story like that. It's in so many of the stories that are out there. And Sheree, one of the things that you've done that I think was really cool was, is collecting, like, you sort of revealed in your editing and collecting of stories, you revealed to a lot of people, I think, that there is a history of Black writers writing science fiction that goes back far further than a lot of people realize that's been happening, because there wasn't the same attention wasn't paid to it at the time. And would you say, because you know more about that than just about anybody I can think of, would you say that those stories of dealing with oppression and the possibilities of overcoming it through protest or through other means, would you say that's been a pretty common thread going back as far as you've looked?
At least for the stories I looked at, definitely. And even if you bring in some of the works by W.E. Du Bois that have since been discovered, at the time I did the first Dark Matter, I knew of two, but I only had space in the first volume to put one, so I put the comic in there. And it had been published in Dark Waters, but it wasn't discussed or taught as science fiction before Dark Matter. And I knew of Jesus Christ in Texas, which is more, more allegorical fantasy story. So I just kind of saved that one. But the comic was about, characters, one black man and one white woman who think in the story that they are, it's the apocalypse, some terrible thing has happened. And the world has basically ended, and there doesn't seem to be any other human life around except for them, and they're trying to figure out how they're going to move forward. And by the time you finish the story, you get another sense that that's not necessarily the case, and the old social dynamics kind of fall back in place by the end of the story. But it's a sense that there were people who were writing using the genre to talk about some of the critiques that they had in the world that they were living in at that time. And it's the and that's the way we use science fiction. It's like the whole pillar of the genre is this kind of social critique of the world. And for me, I wouldn't have expected anything less from those writers, because one, science fiction is the field where you can ask the question, what if? You can create completely alternative, historical lines or alternative futures. You can change things to have another conversation or to give us other insights on it. So why wouldn't people who have the least freedom in a society use that tool of imagination to try to get free, So I knew I was going to find things back then, because nothing really had changed significantly for those individuals. And so I would see a pattern in that writing.
So to go a little bit meta on it then, it seems like, just especially back then, the further back you go, it seems like that the mere act of writing these stories, because they're allegories that you can pick up on what's going on and what the points are, that may have been a really dangerous thing to do, to write something that was clearly an allegory for an existing power structure, for example. So it kind of seems like the very creation of those stories themselves, even outside of the actual content, that in a way is kind of its own act of protest, and a way of pushing back just by, and that's one of the things I've always loved about science fiction is that it's a way you can imagine what we're capable of, whether that's good or bad, but just imagine how things could play out and what we could be if you were to really take your imagination in different directions. But it seems like even to write things like that back in we're talking about like the late 1800s, it seems like people would have had to be very careful what they wrote. And it's a pretty bold thing to even step into that territory.
Mm-hmm. Well, they both self-published those works at a time where a lot of people were self-publishing. It would be interesting to look at, examine like who were the readers, you know, who was the audience at the time. But yeah, definitely it was a revolutionary act to even conceive of such a thing, let alone to put it, you know, words on paper and to reproduce it and pass it along to others. But keep in mind, 1857, Black people were trying to get free.
Right, exactly.
And people were getting free. There were slave revolts happening all over the country. We're not often taught it in the historiography and everything because that's not the narrative that people want. They want the idea of the, you know, the kind of subservient or very passive slaves who kind of went along with the workers, as the Texas school books unfortunately said, of the enslaved bonds people. But people were actively fighting to get free all the time. So creating a story around those revolts and those escapes and the passive, the subversive resistance they had, you know, breaking tools and maybe even poisoning people from time to time, setting fire strategically, all of that work stoppages, all of that, that was a part of the existence at that time. 1899, we're looking after the failed Reconstruction, right?
Mm-hmm.
When Black citizens had maybe 13 years of actual full citizenship.
Right.
And then it was shut down again, you know?
Right.
And from there we go right on into Jim Crow, right?
Right.
Up to the point where now I'm in school and I'm still in segregated schools for the most part. They're busing us, but most of the whites, students had gone to Christian schools at that point. So you go back and look at a lot of the Christian schools, particularly here where I'm from, you can look on the cornerstone of the buildings and see the exact date when they were built. You know, 1958, 1960, like they're making sure they're out of the public schools that they were in before, you know.
Right.
So they didn't have to integrate. So, I mean, Memphis wasn't really desegregated until the late 70s, if then. And it's really still not desegregated, if you want to be honest about it. But yeah, so that's the journey, you know. But there are so many other works that in the genre that are looking at this question of how do you change society, how do we make it better, different for more people, you know, in it. And so, I mean, that's kind of the work that we're sort of drawn to. We like looking at dystopia sometimes, right? We like looking at dystopia.
Yeah. Hugely popular genre. Yeah. I mean, that's everything. Like, I mean, yeah, that's hugely popular, even in young adult fiction. And that says something on its own. I think that dystopia is so wildly popular with young people right now.
You know, mm-hmm. It was pretty popular for me when I was young. And I think I recently came to the conclusion here yesterday or day before yesterday that we're not headed towards like a dystopian future. We're living in one. When I saw people using the name Musketeer and the style of Musketeers to promote racist ideologies and things of such, and I was like, they don't know who wrote it, and it kind of made me laugh. it kind of made me laugh. And I was just like, after I laughed, I kind of got silent and felt a little sad. And I was just like, we're doomed. We're totally, totally doomed. And then I thought after that, this would be a great book. You can't write this. You can't write any of this. I don't know if there's any. I mean, we have rebellion in our bloodline. I mean, America is rebellion. Mm-hmm. The first person that, you know, lost his life in the resistance was Crispus Attucks. You know, it's Boston Tea Party is like glorified as a hero story here, and it's they just stole a bunch of tea and dumped a bunch of tea in the harbor because they were mad. They're pissed off about that. They rebelled. They rioted and they did all of these things to heroic ability. And the irony behind all of that, the irony behind our founding and how people see, oh, you know, we shouldn't do that, guys. We have a curfew. You shouldn't break stuff. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't rebel. You shouldn't be loud and protest and all of that kind of stuff. I'm just like, but this is the stuff we were built on. They taught our ancestors, our founders taught us how to rebel. And they expected us not to do that. It's difficult. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about the actual fabric of rebellion in our country versus what people today want to think of it as?
I think there's always a level of naivete, but also hypocrisy. Right. When we talk about, if we talk about the honest, cold, hard facts about how the nation came to be, it's not a very beautiful story, right?
Right.
First of all, it's completely, you know, the home of hundreds and hundreds of indigenous Native American nations, right?
Correct.
All across, from sea to shining sea, right?
Right.
The entire southern part was Mexico for the most part at some point, right?
Right.
You know, right. So you basically land, we know the story. Land was taken from people there already had it. They were, many of them murdered, genocide right. deliberately as part of the public policy. I'm in a state that was founded by one of the biggest people to do that, Andrew Jackson, right?
Right.
Memphis is actually co-founded by Andrew Jackson. The Trail of Tears is right down the street from me, like the part, you know, beginning of it. Those signs begin to go all the way, you know, through our city. It's a very, very tragic story, but of course they are still here. They are still right. here, alive and kicking in the 21st century with their languages. And still fighting for their, you know, sovereignty and their right to clean water and to maintain their lands as they should have.
Right.
On top of that, you bring in a whole population of people that you have kidnapped, purchased, bought, sold, whatever, from across the waters, an entire different continent, and brought them here to be forced labor. And not only that, but you change the entire human history of slavery and you make their children slaves as well, which hadn't been done right. anywhere else in human history. And you change the laws repeatedly, looking at Virginia and the slave codes. Whenever they get hip on something and they say, oh, you said, oh, you know, only non-Christians can be enslaved. Guess what? I have converted. I am a Christian now. I go to the court. I'm free. So people, you know, formerly enslaved people who convert to Christianity, now, you know, petition the court for their freedom because now they're Christians. Guess what? Slave codes change now. No, you know, it doesn't matter. You can't have a religion. And even if you did, you're still, you know, going to be enslaved. So the laws change for us. So what I say to your original question is the rules always change when black bodies, black lives are involved, you know?
Right.
It's kind of ingrained in the way our society has tried to rationalize and justify the wholesale exploitation of a group of people for a caste system that benefits a majority and actually consigns them to economic slavery, you know, generation after generation. They can go, and I'm looking at a town that's close to my family's history, Mountain Bayou, Mississippi, where they went and they laid their own railroad tracks and built their hospital and their schools and their library. They had all the things to be thriving American citizens and have a good town, and they were doing well, and they were not left alone.
No.
So then, public policy, state policy, all these other things come in, to try to make it so that they're not successful, so they're not financially competitive, right? And then if that doesn't work, then you come in to cover up night and you just burn it down,
Right.
And we talk about Tulsa, Oklahoma, we talk about Rosewood and these up, but it's, those are the two, but they're all over the country. It wasn't just those. They weren't isolated events. So we talk about after the Spanish flu pandemic, we have the Red Summer, So, where just whole groups of people were just running and killing each other to try to keep these communities from being competitive, I think, or just, existing, period. So, that's a very dark, scary history. But out of this stuff, there's also the stories of the trickster characters, right? Who represent the global story of resistance around, throughout time around the world. And some of my favorite trickster stories that come out of these dark historical moments are the trickster tales of High John the Conqueror, right? Mm-hmm. And depending on who's telling the story, he's basically like a favorite. Well, he's not really a favorite. He's a problematic slave, who always gets into some trouble. But somehow he's so amusing in it that he manages to outsmart the master in some kind of way. And so he survives all the foolishness that he gets involved with. But he also... has other moments where he, kind of rescues and saves the community around him. So there's a lot of tales about how John the Conqueror, of course, has connections to West Africa. Anansi the Spider, another trickster character I love,
that's a great one.
That went throughout the diaspora. You can find the stories in the Caribbean and versions in South America and here in the southern parts of the United States. I love Buki. A bookman from the Haitian tales, mm-hmm. So there's, other trickster characters that are this timeless stories of resistance with humor, so that it's not all, darkness and gloom, but there's also this ingenuity and cleverness and wit and humor that people have that they need, in times like this, to survive some of the frightening changes that you're facing. You need that humor. And so that's in the storytelling too. That's in the in our tales of resistance. And I try to put that in my writing as well.
I noticed that actually when and a few things you just said made me think of this with some of the stories I've read in Nine Bar Blues so far. I noticed something, and I saw a common thread with this and the Sixth World series by Rebecca Roanhorse. If you've read those, and in both of those, there's a sense of deep time and of a community of people. Like in the Sixth World series, it's a Native American community, and in several of your stories, it's people of African descent and various types of folks from different times. Because I didn't mention when I introduced the book that the is it subtitle, I guess is the word, is Stories from an Ancient Future, which I love. That really caught my attention.
Yay!
And but there's just such a sense of deep time there. And with that in the Sixth World, there's a sense of just resistance in the form of outlasting, the people who may have been oppressive to begin with, outlasting the structures of power. And that to me is that's a very subtle form of protest and not a particularly violent or active one. So I'm glad you mentioned that about doing it with humor, because I see that in your stories too, that there's a mixture that I happen to love in a good science fiction story, which is where it's, funny and personal and has a warm feeling to it, but is also serious and it's got dark undertones. So you get both sides of that, but I think now that you mentioned it, yeah, the humor that you inject into it, like the trickster stories, that really does help to carry it a lot and make it where it's not just doom and gloom, and it actually adds a little bit of hope in there. I think that's a really good thing to do.
Yeah, you look out your window and it looks kind of scary sometimes. You gotta, but we have the saying, you know, you gotta laugh and keep from crying, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, in 13 Year Long Song, I was looking at just kind of the environmental poisoning that's happening in a lot of small rural towns and places mm-hmm. like that, and how it affects their health for generations. And what can you do about it? It's very difficult to come up against large corporations, particularly companies that are employing most of your town, right? So people want to work, and they want to be able to take care of their families with dignity, right? Even if they have to look the other way and know that they might be shortening their own lifespans, right? In addition to other, you know, costs. The characters in it, I wanted them to be like a real family and have like actual conversations in a sense of, I guess a sense of humor about some of the situations that they find themselves in as they're figuring out how to resist. But actually, you know, it ends up being a whole nother savior that comes through that they don't expect at all.
Yeah, that's actually exactly this. The 13-year-long song was the exact story I was thinking of when I was saying that. So, that's the one that I had in mind about how it's nice to see a story with that kind of that element of family to it, like you said, and a connection to the land and a sense of time and connection to the place. But I also love the choice of the name of the corporation too. That was clever. I had fun with that one.
I was trying not to get sued.
On the nose.
But it was, that was a good choice. That made me laugh a little bit.
But it also kind of reminded me, like, my little brother and I, my better brother and I, he's like 2 years younger than me. We used to, like, on Saturday mornings, we'd wake up, run into my parents' bedroom to go watch television so we can go watch, like, Godzilla or Ultraman or whatever. And I just feel like I was kind of imprinted with those early Japanese, you know, stories. Didn't even realize I was looking at a whole critique of environmental, you know, issues.
Yeah, we're gonna,
we're gonna have a talk later. Okay.
Yeah.
that's right in Rob's wheelhouse.
Oh wow. Okay. Right. But you know, it just left a big impression on me. You know, and it wasn't, you know, years later I'm looking around, I was like, wow, you know, I was thinking that these stories, like, this is happening, you know, across the big waters, right? But it's actually in my backyard. It's in, you know, in my community. It's all around us. This is like, you know, we need a Godzilla right here.
You know? Yes, exactly.
But, or at least a Mothra.
A Mothra or something, you know.
Did you have any recommendations for folks? That's one thing that we usually get into at some point on here, is to just talk about like what we've been reading or anything you've come across. Or in your case, you've got like you've done so much work. So please throw us recommendations.
Oh, there are a lot of great things to look at. The first thing when I think about rebellion and resistance is a collection called Do Not Go Quietly, that was edited by Jason Sizemore and Leslie Connor from Apex Publications, Apex Books. Wonderful collection, about 27 stories, like all these great writers that you already, you know, you love so much in it. Fran Weld and Rich Larson and Maurice Brodus and Marie Rivera. I'm probably saying her name wrong. So sorry. Brooke Bolander, Sarah Pinkster. Just really, really, so many different kinds of stories looking at, you know, this moment, you know, actually, you know, they were like, you know, on the cusp of it. Like, no one knew that we would be in the point where things are being burned down and people are like, whole groups of people are out protesting or what have you, but definitely it was brewing. So this is a great collection to look at.
That's a great one because you, oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay. You mentioned Brooke Bolander in there. The Brooke's writing is so, for some reason, they've got a way of just punching me in the gut every single time. So when I see that name on a collection, I'm like, all right, I'm getting that one, because if it's like, if it's going to be that kind of stuff and things similar to it, then I mean, they're one of those authors that I will always look up, because they've got a way of just always managing to just hit you right in the gut somehow. So I'm absolutely picking that one up.
Yeah. Trying to think of things that like things you probably already know. Obviously, anything by Octavia Butler, her short story Amnesty is particularly great. The Parables novel series is wonderful. Multiple books by Ursula K. Le Guin. I was just like thinking, of course, about Those Who Walk Away from Omelas. The Day Before the Revolution is also another one. And The Dispossessed, of course. But I'm also thinking of a collection of stories from Rian Amakar Scott called Insurrections, which is a good thing to, you know, kind of check out as well. Or that what's the anthology that Victor Laval did with John Joseph Adams. I don't want to mess up the name. It's
I'll look it up real quick.
A People's Future of the United States. Yeah. Yes, and for anybody listening, it's like the Howard Zinn book, but it's science fiction. Yeah.
Yeah. if anybody listens to this that doesn't know who those two are, Victor Laval is absolutely amazing. I recommend every chance I get. I recommend The Ballad of Black Tom, which is an awesome retelling of a Lovecraft story from the point of view of one of the black characters in the story. So it's a nice, it flips it on its head. And it's just a really great writer. And John Joseph Adams has always been one of my favorite editors since the Wastelands anthologies, I think, was where I came across him. Mm-hmm. So what the name of that, People's Future of the United States, was that it?
Yeah, The People's Future of the United States. There is Tochi Hanabuchi's Riot Baby.
I'm reading that now.
Which is a great title.
It looks so interesting. Rob's reading that right now, and I'm chomping to get my hands on it too.
There is a new collection that's going to be coming out called Dominion. And it's an anthology of speculative fiction from African diaspora. So that's going to be coming out soon. Pimp My Airship. I don't know how I didn't say that first. I probably wrote it. I know that's like isn't that the best title ever? Like, that's Pimp My Airship. Yeah.
Pimp My Airship.
That's Maurice's book.
Dope.
Maurice is our, Maurice is our author guest of honor at Multiverse this year. So yeah. That was one of the things that when I first started looking him up, I had heard about him, and I saw that, and I was like, oh, man, I got to look more into this guy. Pimp My Airship? Are you kidding me? That's too good. Yeah. And he has such a great style.
He has stories online, too. Yes, you can pick up any of his stories online, too.
Yeah, and you said Dominion. We'll try and put a lot of this in the episode notes so people can look it up, but what was that Dominion one? I'm going to have to make sure we look that up too.
It's an anthology of speculative fiction called Dominion. So that would be really, that's coming out soon. There's also, let me think, we're going to talk about Resistance. Sam J. Miller has a couple of stories, but The Heat of Us is one that's kind of set like the Stonewall protest. So that's another great story to check out.
I love Sam's stuff ever since Blackfish City.
He's one of my favorite short story writers, so I was very happy when he gave me a book for my book. I was like, yay! Resist Fascism. The writer Barbara Krasnov shared this with me. It's from cross genres, which I don't know if they're publishing anymore, but this is available as a PDF, and it's called Resist Fascism. So it's like
Resist Fascism.
And Fire Magazine publishes all kinds of stories, but there's one by Monique El Desir called Bandai Bon, and Bandai Bon, and that's a good resistance tale. Check out.
Oh, great. Okay. And that's another little note for anybody who listens to this that doesn't know Faya Lit Mag. That is FIYAH. You can look them up online, subscribe to them. They just had a big subscription push online, fueled largely by Twitter. And they've got to where they can now pay pro rates, which is awesome. Nice. They do really, really excellent work. They published a couple of our multiverse guests in the past, and that's something to support. And also wanted to mention one that occurred to me was an anthology that Kat Rambo put together and edited called If This Goes On. That's another one people might want to look up too. Yeah, it's called If This Goes On. It's got a picture of the Lincoln Memorial on the front of it. And it's knowing Kat and the way that she puts stuff together, it's going to be touching stories that leave you with a little bit of hope. That seems to be very much her wheelhouse. And I don't mean to assume what's in the book, but I'm going to read it, and I'm betting that's what's going to be in there. And it's all stories about literally if the current state of affairs goes on. I think this started in they put it together in 2016 for obvious reasons. So that's another one to check out.
What happened in 2016?
I forgot. It seemed like there were a couple of fairly major things that happened, but I'm kind of blanking out on them right now.
This one day will be a bad memory. One day this will be a horrible time. I can't wait until authors and artists and comics have a really, really tough time trying to come up with material that's not just spoon fed to them.
Oh, yes.
Through the media and Twitter. It's gonna be great. And this thing has created a lot of fire for music and everything. That's pretty cool. Except, yeah, coronavirus hit us hard with that. But I am happy that all of you guys are healthy.
Yep.
Cherie, you have showed me a lot of things that I did not know about. Everyone else is going to have to write this down. I'm lucky enough to have it recorded so I can just go back and listen to it. This is great. I'm going to read all those recommendations and just start. I have already a hefty list of things I need to read. I'm going to read those too. I'm definitely going to read your works. Definitely.
Thank you.
I cannot wait. I'm really, really, really excited to jump into it. And then I'm going
you got to. I've got time traveling, Jubilee. I mean, this is right in time for the Juneteenth celebration. Come on now.
That's right. That's
I've got Confederate statues. Strange things.
You hear it, folks. You heard it.
We got
first.
Utopians, fairies and stuff. I mean, it's got that's, all the good stuff. That's what you need right
you
now
here,
in
folks.
A pandemic.
Right.
In the middle of a revolution.
All the good stuff. This is what is needed. The good stuff is needed to enjoy the revolution.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, this is the soundtrack of the revolution as well.
There you go. I love that.
I like that. The soundtrack of the revolution. Hey.
Fantastic.
I'm with that. I am with it 100%.
All the things that make us human. Right. I've got
God, you got taglines for days.
It's just the stuff. Come on. I put my spirit in this book. There's no question about that. I put everything I wanted to say at this time, which I didn't know this time was coming. But I put it all in that book.
But
so,
and you can tell
it
too. It comes through. It comes through.
There's
and it
like quarantine stories in there that I didn't even know we'd be doing that. I had no idea.
So is it prophetic? Is it kind of prophetic?
My family think it's in. They've been tripping me out in that regard. It's kind of like freaking me out a little bit. But that's why I know I need to write some utopias. So all that good stuff can come to pass.
Yes, please. If you are writing things into existence, then please give us something nice.
And I want $1 billion, and I'll donate half of it.
In a good way. You want it in a good way. You always have to
right,
say that.
Exactly.
I'm a little hoodoo. You have to say it in
that's
a good
right.
way. Because the things that listen might put it in you might get run over and get a billion.
Right. I want a clean, healthy, responsible $1 billion.
Yes.
Not built off the backs of people who are suffering. And then I want to take that money and infuse it into the community. I have to be oddly specific, like those Wishmaster movies. I have to be very
oddly my gosh, specific. Yeah. Yeah, which they're so
right.
pokey, but I love them anyway.
Right,
it's like
are.
Watching Final Destination. You
oh my
cover
god!
Cover your eyes, but you're still tuning in.
You're still watching it.
You're
watching that dumpster fire. It's just like it's a beautiful dumpster fire. You're just like, wow, look at the sparks flicker. That's great. Oh, it smells like garbage, but I'm okay with it.
Jesse, Rob, I have to say this, or I'm going to kick myself after this interview. I have to mention Octavia's Brood, which is science fiction and fantasy from the social justice movement. by Lolita Amarish and also Adrienne Marie Brown. They edited that, and I just think, like, I'm sitting here looking at it now on my shelf. I wrote the foreword for it, but that's okay. Totally like resistance stories throughout, and they are very hopeful stories. And a lot of them are very hopeful.
Okay, and that's Octavia's Brood.
Mm-hmm. Octavia's Brood. Yep.
Octavia's okay, good.
Add a lot of good recommendations.
It's added. Right on the list.
Yeah, we're going to look all these up and put them in the episode notes so anybody who ends up listening to this can go and look down and click on any of them and go get them. And speaking of what to go get, I want to just remind everybody that Sheree Renee Thomas's book, Nine Bar Blues, is available from Third Man Books. Anywhere you can buy books right now, you do yourself a favor and get it. Sheree, where can people find you online, by the way, like on Twitter and wherever you like to hang out?
I'm usually peeping somewhere in a corner on Twitter at BlackPotMojo.
BlackPotMojo, okay.
BlackPotMojo. And also on Instagram and Facebook under my name, Sheree Renee Thomas, because I just ran out of creativity at that point. I just put my name on it. So, Sheree Renee Thomas.
Hey, it's branding.
I'm actively adding you on Facebook right now. I am actively doing this right now.
And on Facebook, I put my music list up today while I was listening to, because it just made me happy. Listening to Roy Ayers just made my day. And Bossa Nova, how can you be sad listening to Bossa Nova?
It's impossible. Yeah. You can't do it. It's like trying to be sad. It's like trying to be sad and listen to Zydeco. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, but it's not going to happen.
Like one day, there's going to be a situation where I'm like controlling a large amount of powerful men, and I'll be playing Bossa Nova. Like they'll be doing my bidding, and I'll be playing, because that's the kind of music it is. Like, no matter what's happening, I'm making these people who've made other people suffer look very foolish, and I'm going to enjoy it with the happiest music that I possibly can.
Quite the soundtrack.
So now you're going to make me go and finally finish off the season for Westworld. You said that. I don't know why I got Westworld. Hey, almost done. Almost
this is
done.
An original idea. You can write this one. You can have it. It's yours. Scot-free. A random dude gets a free $1 billion and starts changing the world from the outside. And he's usually, he's literally using really rich, high, powerful, racist white dudes to do all of his bidding for him. And they're really changing the world in the right way. Like a psychological thriller. Okay. We just came up with that right here.
All right.
That's an award winning book right there. That is it. That is it. Just a random.
We gotta go talk to Jordan Peele right away.
Right away. Listen, we're all gonna make money on this, dude. I'm telling you, we're all gonna make money on this.
The funny thing is that guy's clever enough that he could actually probably find a way to make it work.
He can pull it off, right?
Somehow.
there'll be college theses around his making of this film.
Where it came from.
That well. Right.
Yes, I'll be proud to be a historical footnote on that one.
right.
Well,
this was great. I really had fun. I had a fun time. I hope you had fun, Sheree.
I did. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on and taking your time and just bringing your perspective and your recommendations to us too. Our TBR piles both just grew three sizes today.
A wealth of information.
But we don't mind that a bit. Yeah, we don't mind that one bit.
No, we don't mind one bit.
Yeah, well, we'll let you go on about your business, but thank you again for joining us, and everybody pick up Nine Bar Blues, and we will talk to you later, Sheree. Thank you again.
Thank you. Have a great
evening.
Thank you
very much, Sheree.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, well, that was awesome.
That was great.
Having her on. I'm not kidding. That's like I've done a lot of research. I've done a lot of looking into this type of book and like seeking it out, and I still didn't come across half the things she mentioned yet. Like that is she knows what she's talking about. That was cool.
I am going to be treading uphill for several months. Given the unfortunate situation that's happening right now, not only with the brutality, but with also the virus numbers climbing, I have a feeling that I'm going to have plenty of time to read it. All of it.
Yeah.
So just pack up for that, I guess.
Yep.
And I'm going to be doing this for a pretty good amount of time as well. This is Glitchy Pancakes, and we hope you had a nice heaping helping of it and you're full. Yep. We appreciate your time. We appreciate you listening. That was Cherie Renee Thomas. You have to pick up all of her works, and you have to pick up her recommendations. I am. Mm-hmm. Yep. And he has. And we are actively doing that. Any final thoughts, Jess?
No, just I've got a lot to think about. Just everybody who hears this, follow us on Twitter or Instagram at Glitchy Pancakes. And if you have any questions or suggestions or comments or anything, you can email us at cakespod, CAKESPOD at Gmail.
I'm such a nerd. I didn't even think to mention any of that because I'm so excited about all the things I'm going
to
be able to
do. I know. Now I have to write it down. I'd forget too. That's why I got to have these notes or else I'm going to completely forget. Like, bye everybody.
It's like we traded X-Men cards and they were like so quick to want to go home now and look at all the cards we got.
Exactly. I'm too excited. Like I forgot we were recording an episode. I'm like, okay, well, hey, that was pretty cool. Oh wait, no, we're still recording. All right.
We are still recording.
Yep. But no, I guess that's the that's the last stuff is find us on Twitter and Instagram, glitchy pancakes, email us cakespod@gmail.com, and we will keep doing this and get some more episodes out for you soon. Thanks Rob, and we'll see you next time, everybody. Mm-hmm.